All right, looks like we've got a fascinating deep dive ahead of us today. You've sent in quite the collection of materials on urinary elimination. We're talking textbooks, lecture notes, even some quiz questions. You're really digging deep into this, huh?
It does seem like someone's getting ready to really impress their professors, or maybe even starting a new job in healthcare. We're here to help you sort through it all.
Exactly. So whether you're prepping for an exam or just incredibly curious about this essential process, let's break it all down. We'll uncover some surprising facts, and you'll leave knowing way more than you thought possible about, well, going to the bathroom.
It's more fascinating than most people realize.
You're telling me, just reading through this material, I had no idea how much goes on behind the scenes every time, well, you know.
And that's what we're here for, to
Yeah.
demystify it all.
Exactly. So should we start with the basics? Your materials actually do a great job of explaining the journey urine takes from the kidneys filtering waste to the bladder storing it. It's like a whole intricate plumbing system inside of us.
It really is.
Yeah.
And it all starts with those amazing kidneys. Did you know they filter about 180 liters of blood every single day?
180 liters. How much is that like a bathtub full?
Pretty close. It's a massive amount of fluid. And all that filtering produces about 1,200 to 1,500 milliliters of urine per day. That's why it's so important to stay hydrated.
Wow, a bathtub full of blood filtered every day. No wonder we need those 8 glasses of water. So how do our kidneys even handle all that? You mentioned something about nephrons in the material.
Ah, the nephrons. These tiny microscopic filters are the real heroes of the urinary system. Each kidney has millions of them, all working to remove waste products like urea and creatinine.
Millions. That's incredible. And to think all that's happening without us even realizing it.
It's a well-oiled machine, that's for sure. Okay, so we've got the kidneys filtering the blood and producing urine, but it doesn't just stay there, does it?
Definitely not. So where does it go?
Well, from the kidneys, urine travels down these tubes called ureters to the bladder.
The bladder. So it's basically a holding tank.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Think of it like a reservoir for urine.
Makes sense. But like any good plumbing system, things can go wrong. And you sent in a lot of information about what happens when they do, like UTIs and incontinence.
Right, those are incredibly common conditions, and they can really impact someone's quality of life. Let's start with UTIs, those pesky infections that just won't quit.
You even included a quiz question about them. Want to give it a go?
Sure, let's hear it.
Okay, so it says, an upper urinary tract infection is suspected for a patient complaining of flank pain. What diagnostic tests should the nurse expect to be ordered?
Ooh, good one. This really makes you think about the different types of UTIs and how they're diagnosed.
Exactly. So what are our options?
Well, let me see.
Okay, it says A, urinalysis, B, urine culture, C, urine for protein, or D, urine for sediment. What do you think?
Well, the question mentions flank pain, which is a key symptom of an upper UTI. That means it's likely reached the kidneys. A urinalysis option A is pretty standard for UTIs, but.
But it might not tell you the whole story.
Exactly. You need to know the specific bacteria causing the infection to choose the right antibiotic.
So you'd need a urine culture, option B.
Got it. That's how you identify the culprit and its weaknesses.
It's like a strategic battle plan for fighting UTIs.
I love it. Okay, so we've tackled UTIs, but what about incontinence? You mentioned several different types in the materials.
Right, there's not just one type of incontinence, unfortunately. We're talking stress incontinence, urge incontinence, overflow incontinence. Each one has its own set of triggers and characteristics.
It's like a whole spectrum. Which reminds me, there was a quiz question about that. Hold on. A woman notices an involuntary loss of urine following a coughing episode is most likely experiencing which of the following types of incontinence? The options are stress incontinence, urge incontinence, overflow incontinence, and functional incontinence.
Ah, this is a classic presentation. So what usually comes to mind when you think about actions like coughing or sneezing?
Well, they both put a lot of pressure on your core, right? Exactly. And that increase in abdominal pressure can lead to leakage, especially if the pelvic floor muscles are weakened, which is what often happens in stress incontinence.
So in this case, that would be our most likely culprit.
You got it. It's like connecting the dots between symptoms and the underlying cause.
It really highlights how one tiny clue can lead to a diagnosis. It's like detective work.
Exactly. And speaking of detective work, healthcare providers have a whole arsenal of tools to figure out what's going on with the urinary system.
Right. Besides urinalysis and urine culture, you also mentioned cystoscopy.
Ah, yes, cystoscopy.
Isn't that where they use a thin tube with a camera to look inside the bladder?
Exactly. It's like sending in a tiny submarine to investigate.
That's a great way to think about it. So they can see if there's anything going on in there, like inflammation or blockages.
Precisely. It gives them a clear picture of what's happening inside the bladder.
Fascinating. But what about catheters? They play a crucial role in managing urinary problems, right?
Absolutely. Catheters are essential, especially when someone can't urinate on their own.
And I think I remember reading there are actually different types of catheters, right?
You're right, there are. You have indwelling catheters, like the Foley catheter, and then you have intermittent catheters.
It's amazing how each type serves a specific purpose. You know, while going through these materials, I stumbled upon something pretty interesting. Did you know that catheters are actually named after a 19th century French surgical instrument maker?
That's right. His name was Joseph Frederick Benoit Charrière. And get this, the French scale, which is still used today to measure the outer diameter of catheters, is also named after him.
Talk about leaving your mark on the world. It really makes you appreciate the history behind these medical devices. And speaking of history, you know what else I found fascinating? This technique called the Creeds method.
The Creeds method. Tell me more.
Well, it's this technique that's been used for centuries to help people urinate. It involves applying gentle manual pressure on the abdomen over the bladder.
Really? I've never heard of that. Who is it used for?
It's often used for people who have difficulty urinating on their own, maybe due to nerve damage or muscle weakness.
Wow. That's fascinating. It's amazing how people were finding solutions to these problems even centuries ago.
Isn't it incredible? It really speaks to human ingenuity, don't you think?
It really does. And speaking of ingenuity, let's delve into those quiz questions you mentioned that focus specifically on the nursing care of patients with urinary catheters. I have a feeling some of these will really test our knowledge.
Oh, yeah, give me one that'll make me think.
Okay, how about this? The physician orders a urine culture to be obtained for a patient on bed rest. Upon assessment, the nurse finds the patient to be confused and incontinent of urine. What should the nurse do? That sounds like a tricky situation.
It definitely requires some careful thought. You need a clean sample for the culture, but the patient's condition makes it a lot harder. For sure. And look at the possible interventions. They all bring up important considerations. Okay, so I've got A, bladder scan the patient's bladder to determine if urine is available. B, instruct the patient to ring the call bell when needing the bedpan. C, place the bedpan under the patient and provide privacy. Or D, call the physician to obtain an order for a straight cath. So, what do we think? Where do we even start?
Well, let's think it through. A bladder scan, option A, that's a good way to check the urine volume,
But
but.
will it give you a sterile sample?
Exactly. Especially with a confused and incontinent patient, there's a big risk of contamination.
Right, that makes sense.
And option B, instructing the patient. Well, if they're confused, that's not very reliable.
Not at all.
And option C, just putting a bedpan under them, that's not going to help us get a clean sample either.
Because of the contamination risk.
Exactly. So that leaves us with.
Option D, calling the doctor for a straight cath order.
That's the most logical choice here. It might be a little more invasive, but it's the best way to get a sterile sample so the patient can get the right treatment.
It's about weighing the risks and benefits, right?
Exactly. Sometimes a slightly more invasive procedure is necessary to make sure the patient gets the best care possible.
I like how you put that. So it's not just about this one test, it's about the bigger picture.
Exactly. Okay, ready for another one?
Absolutely. Hit me with your best shot.
Okay, here's one that focuses on why we use catheters in the first place. One purpose of inserting an indwelling urinary catheter is to. What do you think?
Ooh, okay, let's see what the options are.
The options are A, assess the amount of residual urine, B, accurately measure the fluid of a critically ill patient, C, obtain a sterile urine specimen, D, relieve discomfort if the patient is unable to void. So what jumps out at you?
Well, a few of those seem like they could be right. But isn't the main reason for an indwelling catheter to help patients who can't urinate on their own?
You're on the right track. While catheters can be helpful for other things, like getting a sterile urine specimen or monitoring fluid balance.
The main goal is to drain the bladder.
Exactly. It's all about addressing the root of the problem.
So is it option D then? Relieve discomfort if the patient is unable to void.
You got it. It's like you wouldn't just put a Band-Aid on a cut without cleaning it first, right?
Yeah.
You have to address the source of the issue.
Okay, that's a great way to think about it. It's not just treating the symptom, it's about understanding the underlying issue. Okay, ready for another one?
Bring it on.
All right, this one's a little more practical. Which of the following collection devices is a nurse's best option when collecting urine from a non-ambulatory male patient? What do you think?
Okay, non-ambulatory. So we're talking about a patient who can't easily get out of bed.
Exactly. And the options are A, specimen hat, B, bedpan, C, urinal, or D, large urine collection bag.
So we're looking for the most practical and dignified option for this patient. Well, we can probably rule out the specimen hat right away. That's more for, well...
not for urine.
Right. And a large urine collection bag, while it could work, it's not ideal for someone with limited mobility.
So we're left with the classic bedpan or a urinal.
And in this case, since we're talking about a male patient, a urinal, option C, would be the most appropriate.
Because it's designed specifically for that purpose.
Exactly. It's all about using the right tool for the job and making sure the patient is comfortable and, you know, feels respected.
Absolutely. Dignity is so important, especially in those vulnerable moments. Okay, ready for one more in this section?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, this one's about patient safety, which is always crucial. Which of the following nursing interventions would be least effective when trying to maintain safety for the patient with an indwelling catheter? This is interesting. They're asking for the one that's not helpful.
Ooh, that's a good one. You really have to think about it.
Right. It makes you think critically about why each option is or isn't a good choice. Okay, here are our options. A, restrict fluid intake. B, report signs of infection immediately. C, maintain a closed drainage system. Or D, empty the urine drainage bag at least every 8 hours.
Well, options B, C, and D, those are all about preventing infection, which is super important with catheters.
Right. Those seem pretty standard.
Exactly. You want to catch any signs of infection early, keep that system closed off to bacteria, and empty that bag regularly to prevent any backflow. So that leaves us with...
option A, restricting fluid intake. But wait, wouldn't you want them to drink more fluids?
You're thinking along the right lines. You might think reducing fluid intake would mean less urine and fewer problems, but it can actually make UPIs more likely.
Because you need enough fluid to flush out those bacteria.
Exactly. Hydration is key.
So even if it seems counterintuitive, encouraging fluids is actually the safer approach.
Exactly. It's a good reminder that what seems like common sense isn't always the best course of action in healthcare.
You really have to know the why behind the what.
Absolutely. It's not just about managing the catheter. It's about understanding the potential risks and how to prevent them. It's about taking care of the whole patient.
Well said. You know, going through these materials and these quiz questions, it really makes you realize there's so much more to urinary catheters than meets the eye.
There really is. It's more than just the device itself. It's about patient safety, comfort, dignity, and knowing all the ins and outs to provide the best possible care.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Speaking of which, we still have one more question about a very unique approach.
Oh, yeah, that's right. The Creeds method. That one really piqued my interest. What does the question ask?
It asks, the nurse is caring for a patient who has difficulty voiding due to a flaccid bladder. Which nursing intervention would be most appropriate to promote bladder emptying?
Okay, so a flaccid bladder, that means the bladder muscles aren't contracting like they should, which makes it really hard to urinate.
It sounds incredibly uncomfortable, to say the least.
Definitely not a fun situation.
And the quiz question gives us a few options. A, encourage the patient to drink cranberry juice. B, teach the patient about the Creeds method. C, insert a straight catheter every 4 hours to drain the bladder. Or D, place the patient on bed rest to reduce metabolic demands. So what's our best course of action here?
All right, let's think about it. Option A, cranberry juice. It's good for preventing UTIs, but it's not going to help empty the bladder directly.
Right. It's more of a preventative measure.
Exactly. And option C, frequent catheterization. That's a possibility, but it comes with its own risks, like infection.
Not to mention it's not exactly the most comfortable thing for the patient.
For sure. And then option D, bed rest. That's not really going to actively help the bladder empty.
So that leaves us with option B, teaching the patient about the Creeds method.
Exactly. Because remember, we talked about how the Creeds method uses gentle pressure on the abdomen.
Right, to help manually empty the bladder.
Precisely. And it can be a really effective technique for patients with a flaccid bladder, and it's non-invasive, which is always a plus.
That's amazing. Something developed so long ago is still so relevant today.
It really shows you the power of simple solutions. And how sometimes the old ways are still the best.
I love that. It's like combining the best of both worlds, the ancient and the modern. Well, I think we've successfully tackled this incredible collection of urinary knowledge you sent our way.
We covered a lot of ground. from the anatomy of the urinary system to those tiny nephrons working hard in our kidneys to the challenges like UTIs and incontinence and even that fascinating Creed's method. Who knew there was so much to learn about going to the bathroom?
It just goes to show, there's always something new to discover. And whether you're a student, a healthcare professional, or just someone curious about how their body works, we hope you walked away today feeling empowered and informed.
Absolutely. Knowledge is power, and understanding our bodies is the first step to taking care of them.
Well said. And on that note, we're going to wrap things up for today. But before you go, we want to leave you with something to ponder. We talked a lot about the science behind urinary elimination, but we're curious. What are some of the social and cultural factors that influence how we view and manage this very natural bodily function? It's something to think about. Until next time, stay curious.
And stay hydrated.